Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. Get right up in trouble's face, you won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Thank God it's Friday, and if it's Friday, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, then it's Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio, Pundit Press, Kinetic Hi-Fi, Ghost Fighter, and Radio Jihad Network. I hope I didn't lose anyone out there. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the Radio Chick, along with my oh-so-intellectual, my oh-so-popular, and funny co-host, Danny Boy. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Annie, and boy, it is glad it's Friday. I did a ton of radio and TV, almost 8-9 hours on the air yesterday overall. So bear with me if my voice starts crackling a little bit today. I hope everybody understands.
Let's just say that funny-sounding guy. I want to welcome everyone that's in the chat room and listening on their smartphones. You know, the majority of our audience does come out of people listening on the smartphones, so we want to thank them for their loyal following. So we try to produce the best we can, and let's hope there's no glitches today. This is the third day, two shows in a row with equipment breakdown. This time we think we got the problem solved, so hopefully you're hearing a cleaner, crisper audio coming over. So I want to welcome everyone. We got a lot going on, and, you know, it is so much that has been going on. You're being hit with things from so many different directions, you never even know where to start. And, you know, last night trying to put the notes together for the show, I was so exhausted just trying to pick out what to do and what to use that I couldn't even put pen to paper because it's just too much to absorb. And it's crazy.
Well, you know, I understand that wholeheartedly. You know, we just had so much breaking out yesterday, whether it was the shooting down of the Malaysia Airlines Flight 17, Israel launching its ground offensive into Gaza. I mean, it was, you know, it was just an astonishing news day. You know, the day actually started out pretty bland and pretty slow, and then it just took off from there, and it turned into a, for me personally, I know it turned into a very, very long news day.
Well, that it did. And those who listen to our show know that we start off each show with a dedication to a fallen hero. Most of the time it's to the men and women serving in the military in uniform, and I occasionally do go out and reach out to first responders because, you know, I myself was a first responder. I was a police officer. And this is something that ends up being very near and dear, having lost friends on the job, people that were very close to me in the line of duty. So these are not always easy. So today's dedication is going out to police officer Jair Cabrera. He was shot and killed while making a traffic stop in the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community in Arizona this year on May 24th, 2014. And since we don't have any dedication music for police officers, I'm going to be playing the hymn, Eternal Father. This is from Fox 10 News. They were learning new information about the suspects accused of shooting and killing a Salt River police officer during a traffic stop. The suspect in the case, Elijah Lauren Arthur, now faces first-degree murder charges. Arthur made his first appearance in court, where we learned exactly what happened during the traffic stop early on Saturday morning. This hits home. I love all of my officers, and I love all of my professional staff in the police department, said Chief Patrick Melvin. Flags flew over the Salt River Police Department at half-staff in remembrance of one of their own, 37-year-old Jair Cabrera, who was killed in the line of duty. According to court documents, Cabrera was attempting to stop Arthur's vehicle when Arthur pulled into the Chevron station at Pima and Chaparral. The documents go on to say Arthur got out of his car, rifle in hand, and fired two shots. One bullet hit the side of Cabrera's patrol car. The other went through the windshield, striking Cabrera in the head. According to an investigative report, Arthur admitted he was drunk at the time of the shooting. Chief of Police Patrick Melvin said this has been a difficult loss, and Officer Cabrera's exuberant personality will be missed by all. He was a hilarious individual, loved his job, and made light of difficult situations in order to get through the shift. He was the one that would always make light of difficult situations so that other officers could get through their shifts if they were going through something, said Chief Melvin. A candlelight vigil was held at the Chevron station where Officer Cabrera lost his life. And this is from the Scottsdale. Bear with me as I go through this. Cabrera was the first officer killed in the line of duty at Salt River Police Department. A lot of department members are in shock, grief-stricken. It hurts. A friend of Cabrera's tells ABC 15 he was working an overtime shift that night to help support his parents. Cabrera was a 7-year veteran of the police department. His fellow officers are now holding each other and their families a little closer. Officers mentioned to me they make sure they hug their family members and relatives before leaving to come to work because it's a dangerous profession. You never know. This show is dedicated to Officer Cabrera. And on a personal note, you know, we send our men and women overseas to fight battles, but we send out men and women every day to fight the battles here on the streets. Every single day, we walk out of our doors. We hug and kiss our spouses, our children, our parents. They never know if they're going to get that phone call or that knock on the door because you're there 1 minute and the next minute you're not. Many a time, my poor husband had to be awoken in the middle of the night and the first thing the desk sergeant would say, don't worry, she's okay. She just got hurt. She's at the hospital. We'll bring her home to you. Someone else will drive the car. Don't worry, everything's fine. It's not anything really tragic. But then there are those times where we hear the call over the radio, officer down. I lost a great many friends. One of them I spoke about was Eddie Burns. I know what these officers are feeling, and I know the loss they feel for Officer Cabrera. To these men and women, we dedicate this show, and we could never say thank you enough, but we can say it by this song's dedication, My Name is America by Todd Allen Harrington. When you see an officer or a firefighter, walk up and thank them and shake their hand.
In the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be I stand for my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour, because my name is America. I stand for
got a great guest that's going to be calling in a few minutes. Matter of fact, he called in early and he I said, call back in 15 minutes, so he'll be popping back in. So we're going to have a great guest today. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun. What do you think, Dan?
You're absolutely right, Annie.
What do you think, Dan? Why am I getting an echo?
You're absolutely we have got a big echo.
What do you think? Why am I getting an echo?
That is weird.
We have got a big echo.
What do you think?
And
I don't know why we got an echo here. Do you got speakers
weird.
On in the back?
I don't.
All right, nope. It seems to have stopped. Thank you, BTR. We thought we had going to have a perfect show here today.
The little BTR gremlins are out again today. they heard us talking.
At least they didn't kick me off like, you know, last time. But we got a great guest. We've got Chief Master Sergeant Chuck Wook, teeth in backwards, Chuck Wooten coming on. Let me see if I can get his mic to come back up. And here we go. Come on. Open up microphone. There we go. Chief Master Sergeant Chuck Wooten, good afternoon.
Hi there. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Welcome aboard.
Great. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah. Now, you're running for office out in Arizona, District Number 2 for Congress, correct?
That is correct.
Now, what made you decide to run?
Well, quite honestly, as I was looking as the field was taking shape, I just really didn't like the choices that we had out here. We've got a liberal Democrat incumbent in Ron Barber, and the Republican candidates that were in the race, they're essentially establishment Republicans, Martha McSally and Shelley Keis. And, you know, we've had enough of that. And what I tell folks is if you don't like what's going on in Washington right now, you have to change the type of people that you send there. And we needed a conservative voice in this race, and I'm finding out that voice is resonating pretty well.
Wow. So you have a war on women, don't you?
You better stop that now.
I couldn't resist. Now, you've got a very interesting background. You served, I believe, was it 22 or 23 years in the Air Force?
Just over, actually almost 21.
Okay. And what were you doing there? Were you working on planes? What?
Yeah, I spent the first 18 years in the logistics career field. And so I was moving stuff all over the world and getting parts for airplanes and missiles and all those kinds of things, making sure that the troops had what they needed to get the job done. And then the last 3 years of my career, after I was selected for Chief Master Sergeant, I was actually competitively selected to a higher level of Chief Master Sergeant, which is Command Chief. And so I was a Command Chief Master Sergeant for the last 3 years. And so at that point I became, it was a pure leadership position, very senior leadership position. And there's only one position in the Air Force higher than the position that I had, and that is Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force.
Which you attained, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I wasn't in long enough. Those guys have to be in for, about 27 years before they're, because it's intended to be the last assignment. And generally, it's one person. So I was the level down from that as a Command Chief.
Mm. See, I love the way we use American Indian terms, but then they go after the Washington Redskins, right?
I know. No, I just wondering about that because they'd have an issue with the Air Force and the Navy because Chief Master Sergeant in the Air Force and Master Chief in the Navy. So.
Ah. Now, why would people, if someone would watch the
I'm sorry. You broke up on that one. Can you repeat that for me, please?
Well, if a person on the street walks up, a constituent, and says, why should I vote for you? What about you would make me want to vote for you over anyone else?
Well, there's a few things, really. And the first thing is overall experience to actually get in there and do the job that needs to be done. I've got a pretty pretty robust resume in regard to the to all three of the other candidates. I tell people that I'm not a one-dimensional candidate. I'm not just a military guy, and I'm not just a business guy, but I'm a very good combination of both because I've also been a business executive for the last 16 years. So we know we're living with the effects of what happens when we send somebody to Washington that has limited or no experience for the job that they're doing or expected to do. And that's kind of what we have in this race down here. And that's a primary discriminator between me and the other candidates. The second is basically my stance on the issues and the issues that are very important to us. For example, I'm sitting in downtown Tucson right now, and the reason I'm in downtown Tucson is because I'm going to actively participate in the national protest that's occurring this weekend. And so I'm about two blocks from the Mexican consulate where we're going to have a protest here in about 40 minutes, it begins, and we're protesting amnesty and immigration reform and all those things. And so as far as discriminating between me and especially one of the primary candidate that we have here in Martha McSally, she's pro-immigration reform. And, we're sitting here in Ground Zero in southern Arizona, and she's telling us that we need to fix our immigration system. And no, we don't. And we don't need to be given amnesty to lawbreakers. So that's usually, and what I'm finding out talking with people here, that is a deal breaker. And so our message is resonating, and that's a very good reason to vote for me. Not the only one, but it's a very good one.
No, the primary is what, August 18th?
It's August 26th.
26th, okay. Because I know there's a bunch of them in August. I always confuse the dates. And one of the questions I was going to ask you is about border security. Recently, a bunch of sheriffs from a couple of different states went down to the border to take a look, from a law enforcement point of view. And they came back with their eyes wide open because a lot of these immigrants are now being shuttled all across the nation, and it's absolutely reprehensible. We recently had it where they were going to put them in this one resort in Texas until the public outcry just screamed. And there was a report that was saying, I'm trying to find it, it takes approximately something like $250 to $1,000 a day to care for these kids.
It's because the government's trying to pay for it, and everything that the government does costs a gazillion times more than it should. But the fact is, started all this stuff. If you recall, when we got this massive human assault on our country, it actually started with them, the federal people, sending people right here to and drop them off at the station.
You're breaking up, sir.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Give me a bad signal. No, I, whatever area you're in, I think it's giving you a bad signal.
Okay. Is it any better now?
Yeah, it is, that's a lot better. Yeah, that is great.
Okay. Well, anyway, so we're sitting here in Tucson, Arizona, and this is really where some of this stuff started. When Texas got overwhelmed with all these children coming in, they first started sending them here to Tucson and just essentially abandoning them at the Greyhound bus station with no food, no water, no money, no nothing. So they were just abandoning people. And now it's morphed into this thing to where, like you said, the resort and the amount of money that the federal government has been planning all along to spend on this, it's beyond reprehensible. And I'm out here protesting some of that today, and I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, good for you, because I know all across the nation this weekend people are going to be doing that tomorrow, too. One of the things that struck me, I had been listening to, I believe it was Andrew Wilkow on XM Radio, love that guy, and a caller had come in. He was from Arizona or California, I forget which, and he has a trucking business where this one gas station, he ends up paying $140,000 a year to purchase fuel. He pulls into the gas station to fuel up his truck, and he sees a bus pull in, and it's obvious it's full of these illegal immigrants that are being bused to another town. He says they all got off the bus wearing T-shirts identifying what country they were coming from, all clean cut, you know, wearing good expensive clothing, and this government official gets off the bus with them, stands at the counter with a credit card by the little machine you slide it through, and purchasing whatever items they pulled off the shelves. So he got curious, and he just said, before I assume that they're immigrants, let me talk to a couple of them. So he walks over, and he starts a chat, and he asks, did you guys just come across the border? He goes, yes. You know, they gave us all this nice clothing and put us on the bus and tell us we're going up to Boise, Idaho. I was like, what? He turns around, walked back in the store, and said to all the other customers in there that are, you know, taxpayers, legal citizens, he says, folks, these are all those illegal immigrants, and this is where they're going, and that's your tax dollars going in that register. And the owner threw him out and said, don't come back. That's $140,000 worth of business because he's pro-immigration. But this is the mindset of these people.
I don't know anything to say about it other than it's a direct assault on the nation, and it's being perpetrated by, in my honest opinion, by 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, because there's been virtually no action taken. So, of course, you know, there has been a little bit of movement now in the Congress, as you probably know, that they've got some legislation that they're trying to get through, although Harry Reid has already announced at GOA, as he usually does, to expedite the deportation of these folks so that they don't have to sit here for, you know, and disappear into the country for 4 or 5 years before they get a hearing date. So this is designed to expedite that. I'm very curious to see where it's going to go. And it's actually a bipartisan bill, you know, which was kind of shocking to me. But I'm glad, you know, I'm glad at least they got it on the floor and hopefully get it to the Senate. And I never have any confidence in anything Harry Reid does, but at least there's some kind of movement going on in the federal government to address this, because right now the states are under siege, and everybody's sitting down here again. And right, again, this is ground zero where we're at here in Tucson, Arizona, and everybody's sitting here and we're shrugging our shoulders and we're like, you know, what can be done? Well, and so you know, we were honored to be asked participate in this protest thing, and so we're doing it.
Yeah.
Chuck, this is Dan Butcher. I'm Annie's co-host, and I want to elaborate a little bit more on border security and immigration reform and amnesty. You say that our border with Mexico must be immediately secured, period. Illegal entry into the America has created major increases in drug cartel activity, violence against American citizens, human trafficking, money laundering, and other criminal activities. Our border communities, ranches, and farms are terrorized on a continual basis, while the federal government does nothing to seal the border, which they are required to by law to do. I'm on record as making this the number one issue of my campaign, and I demand the federal government permanently seal our border immediately. On this issue, I am firm. On amnesty and immigration reform, you say, I am opposed to immigration reform or amnesty for illegal immigrants in any form. The second they crossed our border illegally, they became criminals. Providing amnesty in any form will destroy the middle class, lower wages, destroy conservatism, and degrade our already scarce job market. Amnesty for lawbreakers is an insult to every legal immigrant who entered our immigration system and obtained citizenship legally. Once again, on this issue, you say, I am firm. Why don't you elaborate a little bit more on those statements as to what your solutions would be, you know, as to securing the border and as what to do with immigration reform? Because, you know, right now we have a big problem with actually, you know, we have an administration that won't enforce the immigration laws that are already on the books right now.
Correct. Thanks for asking, and I'm glad that you read it. I believe you probably got that off my website. So
exactly,
take a look at those. And I'm glad you read them that way, because one of the things that we're seeing, especially in this political season, and I hear it over and over and over, I refuse to engage the way the other politicians are engaging in this thing, is they talk about border security and immigration reform or immigration period as a synonymous issue, and it's absolutely two separate issues. And that's the way that I explain it to everybody that I talk to, and I talk to people every single day. And the reason that they're so totally separate issues is because you see, again, sitting down here in this particular district, we've got 83 miles of border with Mexico. And I will tell you that, you know, that the border is porous. I mean, how many times have we heard that term, is porous? Well, go down to the border and look at it and tell me it's porous. It's not. It's wide open. And the drug cartels, they're not only making the rules, but they're winning. And so a solution to that, because, you know, you're not the first person to ask me this question, is actually thought about it. And what we're, the solution to the border security, I don't know if it's as complicated as people want to make it out. First and foremost, the United States of America is still the greatest, most powerful nation on the planet. And if we have a national will to secure that border, the people want to secure that border. They want to seal it and secure it. There's folks in the government that are doing absolutely nothing to that end. If we wanted that border secured, the federal government would get on board and do their job, we could have that border secured by dinner time tomorrow. And I'm absolutely an advocate of doing it with a military presence, with technology, whatever resources that we need to bring to bear. And I liken it to the same thing as if another sovereign nation were invading us or attempting to evade in order to attack us as a people and as a sovereign nation. What would we do? We would launch everything that we have at them to keep them from doing that. I see absolutely no difference in what's going on with the border with Mexico right now than that. So we have resources that we could bring to bear. We could bring them to bear immediately, effectively, and we can win things that would do their job. That's the border. On immigration issues, you know, I think, you know, it's the simple answer of there's nothing that needs to be reformed. What we need to have is enforcement, and that's where the wheels have come off the train. We're not enforcing the law of the land, and if we were, you know, I like to give an example of this was my second time in living in this area in Tucson. I was stationed here in the early mid 80s. I was part of the Type 2 missile wing that was here at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, and we had a border situation where if someone came over illegally, they were essentially captured and returned immediately. You know, and we didn't have this problem back then. What has changed in our country? And what I think has changed is the growth and the aggressiveness of the liberal agenda. And I think that you know, most of us, you know, your conservative radio show, I think this isn't a new concept for you, that the liberals, you know, intend to overwhelm the system and execute their agenda. So that's what's changed. So we don't need to reform anything. There's no reform between enforcement.
No, I happen to agree with you, because as being a police officer in New York City in the mid to late 80s, early 90s, New York City was already a sanctuary city. If we ended up arresting someone and we knew the person was an illegal immigrant, we were not allowed to notify ICE. We were not allowed to put any information into the prison system or on the booking sheet. So there was essentially nothing we could do, you know. But here you have someone that's breaking the law, someone that has come into your possession, you know, had already broke the law to cross the border, has now committed additional crimes while here. You know, why can't we just immediately send them back and say, hey, we don't want your garbage. Take it back.
Exactly. Why can't we? Because, you know, I think we all know that answer. And again, I think that answer is being driven from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Unfortunately, yes, it is. And someone had sent me an article on our last show, and when this one keeps on going around the internet, because people, a lot of these immigrants don't work at all. Some of them are terrorists. You know, they may be from Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, but they assume the mannerisms, the speech, and the customs of a Hispanic person to get across the border and say, hey, you know, I'm Hispanic, so I'm not a terrorist, but they're finding Korans, prayer rugs, and shawls and everything else in the desert being discarded as soon as they cross the border.
Well, that's happening right here in our district, and we've found that stuff, and we're finding it still. So, it's you know, and this is the thing, and this is what the left will tell you, is that these are hoping for a better life. Well, that might be true to an extent, but I got to tell you, when we've got people coming in from these countries, if they know that they can get in here through the Mexican border and not have to buy a plane ticket and try to come in, you know, through, you know, JFK or Dulles or, you know, an international airport, because they're not going to get in that way, so they're sneaking through, and they're, you know, they're controlled, and they don't care, and they bring whatever resources they need to bring to make sure that those people get in. So, you know, and this is another one of those things, are we so complacent as a nation that we're willing to allow this assault on us to continue? And, you know, unfortunately, our representatives are just, if they're acting at all, they're acting extremely slowly and extremely ineffectively. So it's got to change. And I tell people down here in this district, and they say, well, how do you change it? I say, well, you change it one seat at a time. You know, we've got a liberal Democrat running this district right now, or representing this district, and there's not a whole lot going on except for some diatribes saying, we really should do that. But there's no legislation, you know, offered or anything like that. So we've got to do those kinds of things. And, you know, and I respectfully submit to the people that, you know, put me in office and watch what I do.
Well, when you are elected in office and you get there, would you initiate an investigation into why this occurred? Because there's also other stuff that's starting to come out, and slowly and surely it's trickling out. It's coming across the Internet, and occasionally you may see it flash across Fox News, but no other media is carrying it. Allegedly, a lot of these people coming across now are being paid to come across. They jump on that death train, or they're transported by someone, and they don't even have to pay a coyote anymore. You know, they're being paid by someone here within the United States to come across, and we got to follow the money and close that down.
Oh, I absolutely would call for that investigation, and I'd even offer to participate in it, because that's how important this is. And I think it, as we've been watching this administration for the last 6 years, it is every time that some news breaks on some front like this that's, you know, scandalous or whatever you want to call it, as you start peeling back the layers of the onion, you find out it's a very intricate, complex conspiracy, essentially. You know, go back to Fast and Furious and all the things that were involved with that, and everything that's going on, you know, the IRS, and look what's going on there now. And so what we find out, and so the lawlessness in this country, I don't know if we've ever been in this place before, at least not to this magnitude, and somebody's got to step up and do it. Yes, I would absolutely be involved in that.
Yeah, now, we're bending over backwards with these illegal immigrants, but Joe Goldner has a question up in the chat room. Matter of fact, Joe Goldner a while back ran against Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and unfortunately, he didn't win. But he's asking, what would you do about the release of our Marina Tamarisi in Mexico?
Yeah, I'm only stammering because I know that we do have a congressman, a Republican congressman, in Matt Salmon that's been down there to see the Sergeant Tamarisi several times. And, you know, this really lies with the State Department and the President of the United States. You know that Barack Obama could have had him released the day that he makes a phone call to the President of Mexico. Why that hasn't occurred, I don't know. But apparently, you know, the sergeant is the only one that can't get from Mexico to the United States. So, you know, I can join that fight, and I could and make as much noise as I can. But I'm dumbfounded why the State Department and the President of the United States is not doing a single thing to resolve the situation and get that service member back on our soil. I'm absolutely dumbfounded about that. but I can tell you from here from Arizona, along with Duncan Hunter from California, who I believe is has the jurisdiction or the district of that sergeant, I know that they've been doing yeoman's work in pursuing this as aggressively as they can. I would be delighted and honored, you know, especially because of my heritage, my military heritage, to jump in on that fight and offer whatever I can. Hopefully this will be a moot point by the time I'm elected, but I don't know.
No, I'm sorry, Dan. I know you wouldn't ask a question. I stepped on you. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask a simple question. Chuck, if you are elected and you do make it to Washington, D.C., come January 2015, would you support impeachment proceedings against Barack Obama?
I guess I would.
Simple question, simple answer. Great.
Well, I say that because you know why you asked the question, and I know why I answered it.
Exactly. I talk about this every day to such an extent that it's nice to get simple questions and simple answers sometimes.
Well, and interestingly, my two opponents just reported into the liberal media. I actually refused to respond to them because, you know, I don't see any benefit in responding to the liberal media, but they actually responded that they would not support impeachment proceedings. And
right.
Again, this lends itself to the lawlessness that's going on in this administration. It must be held accountable, and for 6 years, we've not been able to do it. And I know, just like you, sir, I've had enough of it.
Yeah. Chuck, let me ask you. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Annie. I'll come back.
I just want to remind everyone that our call-in lines are open, and they can call in and ask the guest a question at 917-889-3675. Our guest is Chuck Wooten, who's running for Arizona congressional seat out of District 2, and we do have some listeners that are in on the line, Sweet Sue and Thomas, so if either one of them want to ask a question, just hit one and raise your hand, and we'll take you on right away. We're also being broadcast not only on Blog Talk Radio, but on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina, on Dan's own station, Pundit Press, Tea Party Community, and Radio Jihad Network. No, Radio Network. I forget now what it is. Oh, Patriot Radio Network. I'll get that one right one of these days. And Ghost Fighter Radio. Geez. One of these days, guys, I'll get that name of that station right. Oh, man.
So,
go ahead, Dan.
Hey, Chuck, I want to come back to this real quick because a lot of people might remember that you came to national prominence when you wrote a letter to Paul Ryan. And, of course, you actually faced a legal challenge about getting your name on the ballot, and the judge ruled that the signatures collected by your campaign were valid so that you could be on the ballot. But what this comes to is, and this particular quote was a press release from your campaign, and this was an article that was on April 28th in the Arizona Daily Star. And I want to bring this up because this really goes to the root of what a lot of what would be considered grassroots candidates are facing against the GOP establishment. And you actually said, did they cancel the primary? I don't know about y'all, but I'm pretty fed up with the GOP and the media picking the winner in this race. Yes, there is a primary in Arizona, and yes, the name Chuck Wooten will be on the Republican primary ballot. And what this is in response to making McSally the front runner at this particular time in the race. A McSally victory is fabricated by wishful and faulty thinking by the GOP, who actually strategized that propping up a female that's already lost twice to run again against Ron Barber is the solution to unseat an ineffective Democrat incumbent. They have been pounding her war chest. They have been pounding her war chest with big GOP establishment money, too, because they're arrogant enough to think they can pick someone based on their chromosome instead of qualifications and by the election.
I need everybody to hear me with all due respect to Colonel Martha McSally. She is not qualified to be a U.S. representative. I am blindly criticized. I am not blindly criticizing an opponent. I'm speaking from extensive experience. She lacks leadership, relative experience, and the ability to state her position and then take a strong stance on important issues. The scant few issues she has taken as a stand on with moderate Republican position, moderate differs from liberal only by degree. But because she has allowed herself to be propped up by the GOP, she will be forced to do their will and go along to get along, and we have too many of those politicians now, don't we? That is precisely why my grassroots campaign will not accept a single dollar from anyone, corporate or private, that will be beholden to them. I cannot and will not have financial pressure cloud my integrity or commitment to actually represent the people of this fine congressional district. I am the candidate who takes a position that benefits the district and never waffles. We the people are fed up with the parade of candidates who are chameleons, saying one thing and getting to Washington and doing something completely different. We have to stand up and fight to tell this establishment we cannot be bought, and we are fed up with this type of behavior. So for the record, Martha McSally is not facing Ron Barber. She is facing Chuck Wooten. And just so y'all know, so far she has declined to appear at every event I've attended. Come on out, Martha. I'm not now, then when. And the reason I bring up this statement is it is one of the most powerful statements that I've heard from a grassroots candidate make on this particular topic. So, Chuck, why don't you elaborate a little bit more on that statement?
Well, I don't know if I can. I wrote that.
it brings back the question. Obviously you're a candidate that is facing going up against the GOP establishment. So, what is it going to take, and what do you need? And how do you feel that you can compete and go up against the GOP establishment and win this primary?
Very good question. And quite honestly, with my eyes wide open, I'm pretty realistic by nature. And, I've not gotten to where I've gotten in life by, making, rash decisions. So I actually considered all this stuff. And again, if you remember, your opening question is, why am I in the race? Well, I'm in the race because I didn't like the choice. And the choice, the anointed one, that's what I call her here, is Martha McSally. And we've already had, I just refused this year, this election, to go into the ballot booth and hold my nose and vote. I think that we just shouldn't have to do that. And, so if you look at the long, long line of GOP establishment folks that have come on board for her, the super PACs, the this, the that. She had John Boehner down here to do a fundraiser for her. She had Eric Cantor come down here about a week or two after she lost the election to Dave Bratt to do a fundraiser for her. And John McCain is a big supporter. John Kyle's a big supporter. So you kind of see the flavor of what we're dealing with here. And so people are saying, well, she's got all this money, Chuck. What makes you think you can beat her? And I have a very simple answer. And it's not Pollyanna-ish at all, I think. It's very true. And the fact of the matter is we're still the United States of America. We still have an election process. And the fact of the matter is that people vote, money don't. And so what do I need? I need every patriot in this country to talk about Chuck Wooten for a little bit, and get the patriots down here. I'm doing everything that we can. We've got a very small campaign team, but I tell you what, we're doing everything but sleeping. And I'm talking to everybody that will listen to me for 12 seconds, and we're doing the best that we can to get them on board. We have a very strong conservative base down here. The conservative base is enough to get me past the primary. And I'm telling people that if they get me past the primary, or when they get me past the primary, I will beat Ron Barber, which is something that Martha McSally has shown not once but twice that she's incapable of doing. Why would we put our money on the same thing for a third time and expect a different outcome? it's not going to happen. He knows it's not going to happen. But I can take him out, and I know how.
Now, if people want to get involved in your website and read more about you, what is your website?
My website is Wooten2014.com, and that's Wooten2014.com.
All right, it's been going up on the chat room, and I do have it on our episode page, so if people are clicking on the page to listen in, it's right there on the description if they want to just click on it and check, you know, you out and your campaign out. You know, I liked your site a lot. Whoever did the work on it did a good job.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, now, you having been in the Air Force and the military, and you know basically how a lot of things work, this Malaysian air crash, you know, the more you learn about it, the more it stinks to high heaven. You ask the first question is, why the heck were they flying over a war zone?
Precisely. I don't know. And I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, when the news broke on this yesterday, you know, then the media kicks in doing what they do, and they start jumping to, you know, 28 different conclusions that they have no proof of. And so that sends the public into a, you know, that just perpetuates the comment, because what they're trying to do is get people to tune in, right? And I think that the more we find out about this, you're right, it stinks. It stinks a lot. And I'm extremely interested to see what our I almost called him a friend, and I had to bite my tongue. What Putin's involvement in this thing was, because it doesn't smell very good to me. So why you would take down a civilian airliner, I don't know. I mean, this, and then of course the correlation back to the one in the TWA flight, if you recall that. You know, there's some similarities there, but, you know, and what I'm trying to do very much is watch and listen without jumping to any conclusions, because I think that that's what we need to do. I mean, I can't even get, and I don't know if you've heard anything different, but I know that they're reporting yesterday that there were 23 Americans on board, but only one confirmed fatality, that they haven't confirmed the others yet. So I don't know if they were, you know, on the manifest but not on the plane, or you know, what the situation is there. I wish that our State Department and our executive branch would take a really firm leadership role on this, instead of spending, what did he spend, 40 seconds on it yesterday as between crack and jokes? And I mean Obama. You know, this is not the time or the place for that kind of thing. I don't care if it was one person that was on that plane. It's still a tragedy, and it appears to be an act of war. And, you know, we got to get to the bottom of it, and we need to be treating it with the solemnity that it deserves. And we're not doing that, as far as I can tell, but we seldom do the right thing in foreign relations. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I'm trying to get the facts, you know, before taking a stand.
Yeah, that is true. And earlier today, Samantha Powers, the ambassador to the UN, made a very powerful statement, and she tied it directly to Russia and Putin, especially about the SA-11 Russian missiles that were used to shoot it down. Now, they're saying that they know it was shot from inside the Ukraine. They know it was shot down with the SA-11. Now, as I understand, the SA-11 is a complicated piece of equipment. It requires 2 full years of training on it, and you've got to be, you know, you have to be a Russian technician or whatever to do the training, because they're the only ones that know it. So it definitely comes back to that. And Samantha Powers tied it all together. Short of calling it all-out murder, which is what it is, and then just a short while later, about an hour and a half later, President Obama comes on with one of the weakest statements. And basically he's saying, well, we really don't know what happened yet. Now, what is going on with this administration? You've got Samantha Powers, the ambassador to the UN, coming off stronger and sounding more presidential than her own president, who she works for?
Well, that's frightening all in and of itself, that the UN's making a stronger statement than our president is. But you're right. They didn't get the, you know, how to fire this missile off the internet. So it does – itself to the assumption that it was absolutely a military. If you recall, when the thing first broke, and we had the Ukraine rebels were claiming responsibility for it, and then they said, no, it wasn't us; it was the Ukraine military that did it. So now everybody's pointing fingers. But you're right. I mean, we don't have civilians in our country knowing how to fire the missiles that the Army puts out in the field or things of that nature. So, again, I think that once we get some more clarity on this, I think we're not going to like what we find.
No,
the question is, what is Obama going to do about it?
Go ahead, Dan.
And Annie, just to clarify, we do have video and pictures of these particular missile launchers being hidden inside the territory controlled by the pro-Russian rebels, and we also have video of them being moved in across the border. Even in President Obama's statement yesterday when he was talking with Putin, they did acknowledge that we have known for quite a while that Russia has been moving this type of heavy military equipment in to aid the pro-Russian rebels. So there has to be some indication there that these folks were probably more than likely trained on how to properly use this equipment and to use this type of military hardware. I've got a story on Pundit Press right now of the phone calls that were intercepted by the Ukrainian government. There was conversations between Russian officials and the Russian rebels at the time that this airliner was downed. So that does show that there was communication there. And so begs the question, just how much is Russia involved with this, with the pro-Russian rebels? It looks like they're heavily involved with it.
Yeah, you had that one Russian rebel chief, whatever you want to call him, put up on Twitter that they just shot it down. Now, this training requires Russian special forces. So, and we already know Russian special forces are mixing and mingling with these rebels. How much more do you have to be hit in the head with the mallet before you realize you got to do something?
Well, but you could apply that to virtually every situation that we've had in the last 6 years, because we seem to be asking the same types of questions every single time. And, what more has to be done? And the fact of the matter is the foreign policy of this administration is an abject failure. And we don't do anything, and everybody knows that we don't do anything. Let me take that back. We do stuff. We actually send money to people we don't like. So that's what America's been doing under this president.
Now, what would you do with our foreign aid?
Foreign aid is, first of all...
We're getting some background noise here. Hang on a second. Did we lose?
No, I'm
okay. We were getting some background noise. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, the first thing that needs to happen is we need to cut off any kind of aid, period. Be sending anybody sending people to come into our country illegally. That's the first and foremost. Second, and I get criticized from time to time, depending on the group that I talk with, about foreign aid and what we ought to do and what we oughtn't do. Well, first of all, we shouldn't time to people like us and not willing to work with us and are not good partners. Second of all, if you remember back to the last presidential election, I think it was during one of the debates, Governor Perry was actually he was asked this question, and I think his response was fairly remarkable, but again not popular, is that you stop foreign aid for everybody and they earn it back, and they earn it back by tangible means, by showing their partnership. Somebody said, well, what about Israel? Well, Israel's not going to have a problem earning it back because of the, you know, because of the nature of the relationship that we have with them. And they are a good friend, and they are a good ally, and we can count on them, and they need to be counted on us. And I would say that with, that should be true with every single one. I'm, you know, like everybody else, why are we sending money to Egypt at all? Why are we sending money to Israel, to Libya? Why are we sending money to Syria, you know, to rebels there? I don't get all that, and I'm not for it, and it adds up, and it's a hit on our economy that we could certainly be doing other things like reducing our debt. So foreign aid, I'm absolutely for taking a very, very, very hard look at that.
Yeah, it's funny because I came across an article, and it just was it's absolutely prophetic. It was written by Yaron Brook of the Ayn Rand Institute, written actually back in 2004, and it was titled Just War Theory versus American Self-Defense. And he was talking about, you know, our response to 9/11 and why we responded in the wrong manner. And he basically was saying that we are fighting an ideology, and we've got to use the same techniques we did during the Civil War, the same techniques we did in World War II. When you fight an ideology, you go all on out and crush it. If you crush the ideology, then the countries that are backing it will stop. The people there will revolt, the same way Sherman, when he went on his march through the South, you know, burning Atlanta, trashing farms, taking all the food and everything else, the people turned around and said, we can't have this. This has got to stop. And they were able to crush the ideology. He's talking about taking any of our foreign aid to any of these countries. And he mentions Iran, Saudi Arabia, Syria, I'm trying to think of what the other one was. And he says, cut off all foreign aid. If you cut off all foreign aid, then they're going to realize, hey, listen, you just took away the silver spoon. The people are going to suffer, and the people are going to say, you know, stop this ideology. He also said, go and just heavily bomb like we did with Berlin and Tokyo. And when the people are there screaming for them for us to stop, their ideology will disappear. Do you subscribe to an idea like this?
Yeah, and again, we're a pretty mighty country, and we have a ton of resources that are at our disposal. And in the absence of diplomacy, because I think we've seen, especially in the last 6 years, diplomacy does not work. You've got to do something, because we cannot, and this is so important. We cannot, as a nation, allow ourselves to become victimized. And that's where we've headed for the last 6 years, to where people are doing things to us seemingly at will and with impunity. And whatever, if you're going to be a military power, you know, if somebody is dumb enough to do something to you knowing the military power that you have, well, you know what, that's on them. But I do agree the ideology is the key to this whole thing. And as long as it's right, for example, I mean, look at the USSR, and you know, so we never had to do, you know, full out warfare on this, but made them blink first, but see, now it's making a resurgence. You know, the socialist agenda is making a resurgence, and it's not just there; it's all over the world, including our own country. And yes, we have to crush it, or we have to be willing to live with the effects of it. And I don't think anybody in this country, in their right mind, I think even the socialists don't want to live this way, because they don't fully understand what it is that they're asking for. So you're right. It needs to be crushed.
Hey, Chuck, since you served in the military, I'd like to get your comments on this. And these comments are especially important because of who they come from, and also from the fact this is not just any particular person. This is not a retired general that is acting as a political consultant for one of the networks. This actually came from four-star General James Amos. And for those that aren't familiar with who General Amos is, he is the commandant of the Marine Corps. And he made these comments during a speech at the Brookings Institute. And he was very outspoken and critical of President Obama's handling of the situation in Iraq and in the Middle East in general. And basically he was urging the administration not to have an isolationist foreign policy. And this is what he said. He said, we may think we're done with all of the nasty, thorny, tacky little things that are going on around the world, and I'd argue that if you're in that nation, it's not tacky little thing for you. We might think we're done with them, but they're not done with us. We're probably the only nation in the world that has the resources and capability to be able to do some of this that others can. Of course, that alludes to some of the comments you just made. In particular about Iraq, Amos said that some of the current problems in the Middle East and in particular in Iraq may have been prevented if we had not withdrawn U.S. troops from Iraq. And he said, I have a hard time believing that we have just been there and worked with the government and worked with Parliament and worked with the Minister of Defense, the Minister of Interior, and the governments of rule and law and all of that stuff. I don't think we would be in the same shape we are in today. And that came from General James Amos. So what are your thoughts on General Amos being so outspoken against the commander-in-chief?
Yeah, well, interestingly, I just read those the comments of the commandant that you just read, and I was pretty delighted to see it. And so now I'm just waiting to see how long it takes before he has to retire.
Exactly.
We've kind of seen that dynamic with this commander-in-chief. You know, he doesn't do criticism real well. He's pretty thin-skinned. I absolutely agree with the general, and he's right. And we knew, from a military mindset, I don't think that there were many people. I certainly can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for myself. I knew that when we had announced, telegraphed our punch, that we were going to be withdrawing from Iraq, and we gave them dates. Then everybody started, everybody that was working against us started gearing up for that date. And so now it's in the situation that it's in because of us. So we went over there and we sent young men and women a lot of blood and a lot of treasure. And we went over there and we did what the nation sent us to do. We left prematurely before it was stable. And now we see the situation that it's in. If you don't learn from history, you're going to repeat it, and that's exactly what's going on in Afghanistan. This commander-in-chief is the most inept, incompetent, and has zero military mind, and apparently is not taking the advice of the military minds that he has working for him. So I don't understand it, but I'll tell you what, if I was a parent of someone that was lost or a hero that was lost in that war or somebody that was main fatty, and there's too many of those, I would be absolutely furious that lives were in vain. And from a military perspective, there's nothing more unconscionable, except for maybe Bergdahl, and that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
So I agree with the general, and he's absolutely right. We could have done this so much better. And the fact is, we know how to do this. And it's not about nation building, it's about stability. Why are we going to send our folks over there to do this stuff and then leave them with an empty shell and then expect them to, ward off the evil forces that we ran out? It's pretty naive and it's irresponsible and it's reckless.
Well, that it definitely is. When you stop and think about all the things we're doing, here you've got Israel, as we're talking on air, it's being bombed. And we're doing nothing for our last true ally. Instead, he's talking about hand-picking out Syrian rebels to train.
Yeah. Well, not only are we not doing anything, but if you've been following some of the diatribe coming out of the mainstream media, I think we even have some reporters on the ground that are talking bad about the Israeli troops. Now, I'm a guy that actually got to serve with the Israeli forces for a short while, and I know exactly what they're up against and what they're doing. Those folks have been in a war for a long time, and they can never let their guard down. I have the utmost respect for Benjamin Netanyahu, and he's at his, oh gosh, that's my phone ringing, I'm sorry. Let me stop. Wait. I've got the the most respected he's doing, and why it's present, just the path that he's taken to ruin this relationship that we have. You know, if the relationship is going to survive Barack Obama, but unfortunately, you know, and I believe that Israel is going to do very well defending itself. I'm so not messing around that they're actually ramping up. And you know, we've trained them very well, and we've sold them a lot of really nice weapons. They know how to use them. They're professionals. And, they're going to take care of themselves. But it would be awful nice if the same thing takes a turn for the worse, that they could call on us and we would go, as if we would, or Germany or one of our other allies.
All right, Chuck, you're breaking up badly again.
I'm sorry.
It's the bane of cell phones.
Yeah, I'm terribly sorry. Any better?
Yeah, that is. It's funny. Sometimes just stepping over a couple of feet will change the signal.
Yeah, my point was is that I'm extremely saddened that our allies in Israel can't rely on us as a nation, as an ally, as a friend, the way that, you know, say somebody in the UK or Germany or Japan or someplace, you know, where we have, you know, other, you know, ally relationships, because I don't think that Israel is in a position that they can actually trust us. And I think that's absolutely tragic.
That is completely tragic. But instead, we send aid over to Hamas, to Hezbollah. Yeah. We send it over to Syria. And right now, there was a Wall Street Journal editorial that I believe came out today, just before we went on the air, and I caught the headline that the Middle East has never been as bad as this since 1970. If you think back to the 1970s and the civil war in Lebanon, and how the Middle East just disrupted in complete violence, and then you remember also the attack on the Olympics in Munich, all in that same time frame. And are we spiraling back down to that?
Or are we already there? It's kind of looking like it's that and perhaps more. I mean, look what's going on. It's exactly like I said. If you look at the unrest in that entire region, it's not looking good. And so now we've got Israel ramping up its response, which it has to do because it's got a responsibility to protect its citizens. And you know, supposedly their greatest ally in the United States, working against them by enabling their enemy. Both of you speak also, I don't think this is anywhere close to over.
No, it's not even close to over. Now, you had mentioned about cutting back on the budget once you end up in Congress. And I'm sure, Dan, you've got that bit where you were talking about cutting off funding to various agencies such as the IRS and EPA and how they're overregulating. And I came across an article just right after I had read your statement, and this was from the Mail Online, which is an English newspaper. But they write so well about what's happening here in the United States that our own media fails to pick up. It's amazing how a couple in California, California has a major drought going on. So people are told to cut back on watering their lawns and filling their pools and so on and so forth. So this couple, being, you know, green wise, did exactly that. But instead, they end up with a fine, a $500 fine, because they allowed their lawn to turn brown because they didn't water it. And they have so much X amount of days to get their lawn to be green again. Does any of this make sense?
No, I heard something on Fox today along the same lines that there's a place in, and I think it's in it's on Long Island, that are going to be fining people for not cleaning up dog poop in their yards, in their own yards. So, you know, you can't make it up. But that's yesterday, and the law says that you have to do it on a daily basis, and if you miss a day, you're subject to a fine.
Well, what if it's not your dog that did it? You don't even
And then again, this is what we come to. So out here in Arizona, you know, we I think it was Mark Twain that said that that whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. And so water is very important to us out here. And I attended a hearing at the state capitol a few weeks ago, and the hearing was on EPA overreach yet again, because they've got within the Clean Water Act, they're attempting to change the definition, a key definition in the Clean Water Act that changes everything for the United States of America. And what that definition is the definition of navigable waters. And they're trying to change this essentially, just by heavy-handedness of the EPA. They're trying to change this to include in that definition of navigable waters dry washes and ditches that don't have any water in them. That mean, and it sounds absurd, but this is a real deal. So the congressional caucus here from Arizona, they met and they held a panel discussion on this thing, and it's very real. And the EPA is trying to do it. They're trying to do it even on a draft document without even getting comments on it, and they're trying to shove it through. And what that means for the average person is it's going to wreck additional small businesses here in Arizona. It's going to impact home builders. It's going to impact, you know, anybody that's got one of these navigable waters under the new definition on their property, ranches and farms. And if you don't have the proper permit, and I don't know what you know about getting EPA permits, but it's a quagmire. And what that means is they're going to fine, if you don't have the proper permits that they call for under this new change, it would cost an individual and or a company, depending on whose property it is, $37,500 a day.
Yes.
Now, this is what we're talking about with the economy, because it's ruining these types of things and the government overreach and these. Well, and I don't know if you saw. I'm going to shift gears here real quick. I don't know how much time we have left, but I wanted to kind of get this in. We have a Republican congressman here in Arizona, Gosar, and he successfully introduced a bill into the House that actually reduces funding for the IRS. And it's a fairly significant amount, $400 million, because of their behavior and some of the other things that's gone on. And it passed the House very easily. Now what happens in the Senate, you probably know that, but I wanted to say that the people in Congress right now are acting, and the only thing that I think that we need to be successful is to put more people in there with the spine to do these kind of things, back them, co-sponsor them, and get them through in both houses.
Yeah, that's exactly true, and I was talking to someone online just last night, and that's exactly what I said. We have to do it one seat at a time. And it's not something we can do overnight. We just have to keep at it, and let everyone know that the majority of the United States tends to be more conservative than it would be liberal or progressive. We're just allowing a few people to control the entire conversation. We've got to take that conversation back.
That's exactly right. And that's why I stepped up, because, you know, I'm not in this for any other reason other than America and getting her back where she needs to be. And I'm kind of fearless in this regard.
Yeah. Now, Joe Goldner posted in the chat room that in L.A. they were told to report on their neighbors for a reward. And I got to tell you, our local city over here, I'm in the unincorporated area of Buford here in South Carolina, but there's also a city of Buford just on the other side of the bridge about 4 miles away. And they decided they were going to try to do that, you know, tell on your neighbors if your property wasn't being kept neat, if your dog was, you know, you were walking him without a leash or something like that, to tattletale on your neighbors. And they were going to offer a reward. Well, once the word got out on that, being a red state, I'm surprised they didn't run the mayor and the council out of town, because that quickly disappeared. But that's what some people are trying to do. They're actually trying to get you to rat out on your fellow American.
Well, we've got the First Lady of the United States asking kids to do that to their parents. So, you know,
well,
surprised?
No, but it's also in Obamacare.
Yeah.
Where the kids end up ratting out on the parents, and
yeah.
the neighbors end up ratting out on the neighbor. You know, it's
it really sounds like the Soviet Union, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Speaking of which, the UN has this small arms treaty that Obama's saying he's going to sign or whatever, and fortunately
yeah.
it's not going through the Senate. Wise heads have prevailed on that so far, but once a treaty goes before the Senate, it simply gets shelved, and anyone can then bring it back up in the future. So this thing is never dead, and something we're going to have to keep on fighting. But, you know, doing my research, I came across a job opening for the United Nations Careers, a disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration officer. And this is just posted this past May. Posting period is from May 27th to July 26th. And I read through it, and it basically sounds like they're putting together a unit so that once this small arms treaty goes into effect, they can then effectively go into whatever country or whatever town and start confiscating weapons. This is scary.
Very
they're
scary.
Actually hiring people for this.
Yeah, and I think that this, well, it's pretty evident that it's part of the Agenda 21 thing, if you're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah. We had to educate Newt Gingrich on that one.
Yeah, so, you know, the good news for us at this juncture, and I don't know how good it is, but the UN is, you know, as an organization, completely ineffective. So it's very scary that anybody, especially a sitting president of the United States, would actually sign something into law. I understand that just today he signed yet another executive order against AK-47s about them being imported into the country, about them not being allowed to import into the country, and that includes parts and ammunition. So,
yeah.
So that was just today. That was probably about an hour before you and I got on that I saw that.
Yeah, I have it in my fat little hand, effectively banning AK-47s and other
yeah.
Kalashnikov Russian-made. Excuse me, I have a cough. Sorry. Oh, man, I had a tickle in my throat that, brought tears to my eyes. But he signed that in, and there's no appeal process.
Right. I know. This is lawless. This is, you know, a rogue president. I'm just shaking my head like everybody else, but there has got to be an answer, and somebody has got to have the guts to do it.
Yeah, and we'll have to see now who's going to end up running for president. And there is a committee that's trying to draft Ben Carson, and I've got my Tea Party meeting coming up this Monday, and supposedly one of the representatives of that committee is supposed to be showing up, so we'll see, you know, whether or not he'll run. I think he's going to be the one with the most popular support because definitely no one's going to get back behind Mitt Romney. That's for sure.
No, and I'm kind of holding my breath through the entire process and just hoping that we don't try to put, you know, an establishment person running. They want an Obama, but not the job that we need now to undo the harm that's been done to the nation. You know, I hope it's a conservative, and you know, somebody that we can really rely on to do the right things, both home and abroad.
Yeah. Now, there's been so many assaults on the Second Amendment from the EPA trying to ban the lead in ammunition. Matter of fact, the military has gone towards these lead-free bullets now, as I understand.
And you hear me chuckling because that's what I did when I read it. And I'm like, you know what that means? That means that agency has got way too many employees and way too much time on their hands. And you know, and that means this is what they do. They grasp at straws, and anything that they can do to chip away at our gun rights, and no matter how insignificant, they're going to do it until they can't get away with it anymore. And so it's something that we have to, and thank God you know, I live in a state that's probably got the, you know, the best gun laws in the United States, and, you know, and it's all about the Second Amendment down here, and anybody that's not, well, Congressman Barber is not, but I certainly am, and, you know, I'll tell you what, there is a fantastic group of patriots down here, and they live for the Second Amendment, and I'm so happy for that, because that's exactly what we need in this nation.
Now, that's exactly what we need. And they're still trying to take the guns away from the D.C. area, because I believe some guy went down to it was either Florida or Texas and attempted to purchase a legal firearm, and he got himself into a bunch of trouble. So that's going to be another interesting court case, you know, to watch and follow. Constantly they're all going after the Second Amendment, which – really, you know, you would think it's written in stone and people would understand it, but you've got now Bloomberg flying all over the country, you know, doing these anti-gun rallies. And every time a shooting happens, and 99% of the times it's with an illegal firearm, and it's someone from the left, a left wing nut, and they keep on saying it's Tea Party racists, but it's not.
Yeah, virtually 100% of the time it's you know, it's a crazy person, essentially from the left, and I don't mind saying that because those are facts. You know, dispute the facts, and you know you can't. And so I don't know. I think, you know, it'd be nice if they would just accept defeat and move on, but that's not their nature. And so that's when it becomes really important for the folks like us, you know, patriots that stand for the Constitution, every single word of it, understand that. Living document to be changed by a pen and a phone. That we have to be as resolute as our enemies are, and our enemies are trying to take that Constitution and put it in a shredder, and then redo the United States of America into something that it was never intended to be. So they're not going to be successful. But I just say that as encouragement to the folks on the right. Don't get weary and faint, because we need everybody right now, and that goes back to my race. And that's what I'm telling everybody down here. You've got to do your part. Sitting on the sidelines right now isn't an option, because the other side is not sitting on the sidelines.
That's absolutely true. And you mentioned the Constitution. And unfortunately, you know, even people going to law school are not being taught the Constitution. They're coming out of law school having never read the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. Now, K.T. McFarland, back on January 7th, wrote a really interesting article. And her family has a tradition on July 4th. Everyone sits down around the table, and everyone reads a passage from the Constitution. And she said over the years, you know, the kids would find some excuse to duck out or whatever, but at least the kids learned it. But now the kids are older and adults. They're bringing their friends over, and she's finding a growing crowd to the point where that this past July 4th, when they did it, the emotion that went through the room, because people were finally reading it and understanding what this document was about, what the Declaration of Independence was for, all the grievances, and how we brought the Constitution. She said it was phenomenal. And this is what we have to do, you know, make sure our kids know it. I mean, I've got a full case of constitutions and declarations of independence I had gotten from Representative Joe Wilson's office. So if anyone wants one, just contact me. I'll tell you what address to send a self-addressed envelope, and I'll mail them to you. And if you don't believe me, I won't do that. Ask Joe Goldner in the chat room, because he needed them for his son for school, and I sent him, I think, about 10 or 20 of them. So, people, we've got to get, you know, others educated on what this document stands for. It is a precious document.
You can't support and defend something that you don't know what it says, not effectively anything. So, you know, I absolutely agree with you, and I would love to see some real organization on the conservative side, and I think that's an ingredient that we have right now where we're kind of fragmented in our little groups and this and that, and everybody likes to go to monthly meetings and complain about stuff, but when it comes to organizing and actually making an impact, that's when we've been kind of falling short, and where we're at a disadvantage to the folks that are trying to take away our freedom. So, you know, my message for the conservatives of this country are, you know, get off your tails and let's get something done. We're smart people. Let's organize. And there's more conservatives than there are liberals, just as you said. we shouldn't even be having this discussion. The other side ought to be the ones having little meetings and sitting and fuming instead of us.
That's true. Matter of fact, I've got to remind people that September 17th is Constitution Day. So, Dan, maybe we can do something special for that. And I think that would be great.
That would be
a great forecast. Yeah, that would be an excellent podcast.
That would be great, Annie. I want to kind of segue into something here because this is very important. And, you know, and this comes back to dealing with educating the public, and it's education in general because, you know, obviously the future education of our children is a key component in turning around our country and heading it in the right direction, because we know we do have a lot of indoctrination taking place in some of our public schools, especially in school districts that where the teachers unions have a very heavy presence, and of course a lot of that has to do with Common Core and such, and of course Chuck, you're on the record saying, you know, that the actual stakeholders in a child's education, such as parents and teachers, should be the driving determinants of the content and quality of what our kids learn, how they learn, and where they learn. So my question is, you know, what are your thoughts on Common Core? What do you think is the best direction for our country to take as far as educating our children? And are you a supporter of school choice? The, you know, parents having the ability to, you know, send their kids to public school, to private school, to homeschool, et cetera. You know, do you think that school choice and competition in schools is also a good way to go?
Yeah, I'll start with Common Core. You know, I think, you know, you've had fun for a while now, so I think you probably know where I'm headed with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Federal has no business being in our kids' education, period. The fact of the matter is you don't have to look very far into the federal government to know that everything that they manage is a failure. And so putting our kids' lives and educations in the hands of the federal government is a recipe for disaster. I think we all know that, at least those of us that are taking a look at it. On the second part, we absolutely have to. You know, one of my biggest problems with Common Core, the research that I've done on it, because it's very important, and even though, you know, I've got grown children, that doesn't mean that you know, you turn your attention away from it, because we're relying on this next generation to do things correctly for us when we're no longer doing it ourselves. So Common Core, when it was being constructed, it was done, and it took advantage, essentially, and I'm gonna use that term, it kind of took advantage of the states because it dangled the financial carrot. You know, here, do this for us, and we're going to give you some money. And the states, because the economic conditions pretty much in every state are such that, you know, a lot of states took it, including the state of Arizona. And that was just absolutely wrong. But what happened is when they were formulating the curriculum, there's two groups that the federal government failed to even consult with, and that is teachers and parents. They were not consulted with on this new behemoth called Common Core. Who was? It goes back to Washington cronyism. We're talking about lobbyists. We're talking about people that create English standardized textbook publishers. These are the people that we consulted with. So that's the fox guarding the hen house, and we've almost become too accustomed to the federal government treating us like that. So there was a small group that benefited greatly financially from Common Core, and our kids are paying the price for it. I am ultimately hopeful and optimistic that every state will go the way that states like Indiana have done and back out of this thing, because they know it's bad. They knew it was bad, they got out of it, and I'm hoping that every state does that got into the thing. I think there was 46 initially, and they got to get out. And as far as school choice, absolutely. There's nothing more valuable than our kids' education. You know, we've successfully dumbed down the country to where we've fallen in every single academic area, sometimes substantially down the list in according to, you know, standings of other country, you know, industrialized countries. And so we got to fix that. Again, we're a great country. We've got great kids, and the kids are just, you know, they're looking to us to make the right decisions for them. And not only are we running them in, you know, so deep into debt they may never get out, but now we're also impacting their education and their ability to learn and earn. And we got to stop that.
That's the God's honest truth. And this is a true story. A friend of mine, she came home from shopping, and she was hysterical laughing. So she calls me up on the phone. She goes, "You're not going to believe this. I'm going through the grocery store line, and you know those little plastic dividers you put between your order and the next person's behind you, you know, so that the cashier knows that it's a separate order? Well, the cashier gets up to this little divider, and she's trying to wave it over the scanner to get the price. So she goes, calls for the manager, "Does anyone know what the price of this thing is and what it is?"
Oh my goodness.
This is what Common Core is producing. The girl didn't even realize it was something that it was not a purchase. It was to mark the difference between two orders, but she's assuming this woman was trying to buy it. That's what our schools are producing. And thank God that Dan is homeschooling his kids.
You know, and I've seen the math problems. I know that you probably have, too. It's just not rational that we would try to do this to children. You know, I've seen pictures and videos of kids that just are having – they're breaking down because they're failing. And they're failing because, you know, they've taken something – you know, 1 + 1 = 2, and they've made it so complex that you know, that size of a brain or that mature of a brain can't comprehend it anymore.
Yeah, well, there's one kid, I think he was a fourth or fifth grader, and he took one of these Common Core tests, and the teacher turned around. All he did was just simply write what the correct answer was. He didn't do all the calculations and everything else. And the teacher turned around and was going to mark him a failing grade until you said, "No, teacher, you told me to tell you how I did it." "Well, I did it all in my head, and I put the answer on the paper. That is the correct answer mathematically, right?" She goes, "Yeah." She couldn't fault him that because of the standard Common Core. So the kid outwitted the teacher in Common Core. God bless that kid. I think he should run for president. Now, we were talking about runaway government spending and how you would love to trim the budget and get our debt paid down, and you've talked about the balanced budget amendment. And I've been talking about this for a long time, free money. You know, people that get their money for food stamps, for Section 8 housing, for welfare, for free college tuition because they're not working, for their medical services, for their telephones. What would you do to stop these programs, or at least make sure they go to people that really and truly need them as a method to get back up on their feet?
Yeah, you know, we're always going to have poor people, and poor people need to be assisted. There's no question about that. You know, I'm not that heartless guy that says that, but I am heartless when it comes to fraud, and right now it's rampant. You know, 40% of folks in this country are getting some sort of government assistance. And there's been exposés on television and things like that. There's fraud is rampant. You know, so the government has, before it gives out any money, people really have to prove that they absolutely need it, and then there needs to be some sort of parameters in which they get that. So, for example, I guess fraud is probably the biggest deal, and we can. But then on the other hand, you know, the federal government has created an environment that is such. And look at the tens of millions that are out of work, and some, you know, just have, you know, given up hope and never getting it. Well, there is an answer to all that, and the answer is the free enterprise. So, you know, so we can look at the people that are gaming the system, that are lazy and don't want to work, or that are getting disability checks when they're not disabled, or they're getting paid under the table, and, you know, all these things that go on. But there is a solution, and the solution does actually fall to the federal government, not the federal government providing for these people, because that's, you know, that's why we're in the situation that we're in now. And if the federal government, i.e. the Obama administration, had their way, there'd be a whole lot more people on the public dole. But we have an opportunity in this country, and I don't even know if it's why, but it should be, in that we're sitting on, right under our feet in the western United States, we're sitting on the answer to our financial problems. Over the next 10 years, we got about $150 trillion worth of natural resources that we can't get to because the government has locked them up and locked up the rights to locked up the property rights for people to do that. So if you look at what's going on in North Dakota, for example, right now, shale that they've got there and the boom that they're having, you know, they don't have in Williston, they don't have enough housing, they don't have enough employees, they don't have enough labor, they don't have enough, you know, anything to manage the energy boom that they're having up there. And one thing they certainly don't have is a delivery system for it. They're putting stuff on trains and trucks. It's highly inefficient and really not good for the environment, whereas a pipeline coming out of there would be, you know, a lot more environmentally friendly, even though the left would never admit that. Western United States, if you look at minerals, if you look at the mining industry, the forestry industry, oil and gas, the shale, all those things, we are so rich out here, we could solve our problems and the next generation's problems without ever blinking an eye. And, you know, and why we're not doing that is because we've succumbed to the environmental terrorists, and that's exactly what this thing is. And so there are economic solutions, but we don't have a federal government, i.e. the administration, to stand up and actually address these things.
Yeah, you mentioned the pipeline, and every time I hear about one of these tankers or trains derailing or the tanker, you know, in an accident or something like that, I wonder how much of it is actual sabotage by these environmentalists. I don't think anyone's ever really asked that question.
Yeah, I have no idea, but I know that the trains and trucks are worse for the environment than a pipeline would be, and it's been proven.
Yeah, it is. One way is fast, extremely fast and efficient, and the other way, you've got too much room for human error.
And by the way, all this creates a whole lot of jobs.
That is an understatement, if ever, because I know here in South Carolina they have some legislation going forward. I think it should be passing soon or on Nikki Haley's desk for signature to open up the shoreline for offshore drilling. And, you know, we're heavy tourism, but it can be done where it would not affect tourism in the least bit.
Sure.
And
so
you imagine go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, just imagine the boom we would have in this state.
Well, we have a similar situation here in Arizona in the mining industry. And the environmentalists, the EPA and the Forest Service essentially have locked up so much of it, they've made the permitting process drag on for years and years and years. In the meantime, Arizona being one of the biggest producers or the biggest deposits of copper in the world, can't get to it because the environmentalists won't allow us to mine it that we need to mine it, and at the same time we're importing copper from other countries. And I don't know how you look at it, but it sure isn't logical to me.
And I'll add this to the conversation, because I live here in Texas. I actually live in the Texas Panhandle. You know, where farming and ranching and oil and gas is our livelihood. It is our lifeblood here. And here in Texas, you know, we have, of course, number one, our biggest advantage is no state income tax. But we have to use an example of how to do things right, you know, here we seem to have the right mix of regulations that are in place to ensure safety and what have you. We have the right environment to bring jobs, to create jobs here. We have the right mix. You talk about the oil and gas industry. If you go along the coast here down in Galveston around Houston, you see the perfect mix of how, you know, the oil and gas industry and tourism and everything, how there's just an absolute perfect mix, and how all of these entities can get along with the proper environment being created without the over-regulation.
Yeah, I know. I lived in Texas for about 11 years, and I missed that no state income tax, by the way. but you're absolutely right, and I think it's because of the state government that you have is intensely focused on the citizens of the state, and you know when you have your governor going around the country enticing business from their state to his state. And they're coming. Well, my goodness, that speaks volumes to the environment that's been created in Texas.
Exactly.
I worked in Houston for a couple of years, and with the Compaq Computer Corporation, which later became Hewlett Packard. And the oil and gas industry down there. I mean, they've really got it going on, and they know, and the country needs it. And we need a whole lot more of that. You know, we haven't built a refinery in this country since the 80s. And, you know, how much more could we produce if companies would invest in some refineries? But, you know, they might be, you know, killing a turtle or a little fish or something if they tried to build a refinery. So, you know, they're not allowed to do that.
No, they're not. And, as a matter of fact, Tim Selty just put up in the chat room a link to the relocation of the unaccompanied immigrant minors, and he said, keep refreshing it. You'll be surprised about, you know, how many people and how much it's affecting us. And I noticed the state of South Carolina has none, and our Governor Haley said that she contacted them, but they said no, that there was not any plan to come here. I wonder how long that's going to last. Interesting. Very interesting. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, they're trying to. I mean, obviously, the plan is to saturate and overload our systems, and they're just not there yet. I mean, if you look at the projected numbers, if somebody doesn't get a handle on this, I think we're going to be there sooner than you think. So, hopefully, Governor Haley will keep them at bay. But we're taking them here in Arizona. We're open.
Yeah, and we've got a caller coming in. This is our friend Thomas. He's got his own radio show here called True the Vote. True Radio. Thomas, and your question.
Hi, Annie. I'm just listening in, and I just wanted to say this whole immigration thing, really, I don't know what to think anymore. Part of me, when you have the Pope coming out and say, oh, we should just let them all come here. I don't really know what to think anymore, but I'm really sick and tired of it, you know. And when we find out that these kids were now they're being paid, and they're being told by the governments of Honduras and these other nations that if you make it to the U.S., then you'll get amnesty. I'm just disgusted, really, and that's my comment, Annie.
Thank you, Thomas. It's funny because he mentions the Pope, and I was born, raised, and I was a devout Roman Catholic up until the point where I started seeing certain things going on in the Catholic Church, and I'm not speaking out, about them. It's just that I noticed certain things. But then when I was working as a police officer in Brooklyn, New York, we ended up responding to a burglary call at a local Catholic church. And what I witnessed in the handling of these illegal immigrants and the church right there being actually participating in forged green cards, that turned my stomach. And I said, that's not what Christianity is supposed to be about. Yeah, you can help those that need a hand up, but abetting a crime, I don't think that's what it's all about. And I don't even know what to say about what the Pope has said now. It leaves me flabbergasted. He wants them to come to our shore. Well, then why can't we pack them over at the Vatican? Let him take them in.
It is a sovereign nation. Unlike in we have open borders, so I don't know if that means we're sovereign anymore or not.
No, it takes away our sovereignty, actually ceding our sovereignty to other nations and to the UN. And the UN itself was saying that we were supposed to be taking these people in, again, ceding our sovereignty, our security, and our entire country you can hear, I am absolutely, I don't even know how to even respond to this. It just, people assume that because we are a free nation, then they're free to force their will on us. Instead of saying, hey, listen, no, we fought for this land, we fought for these freedoms, we will protect them, and we will not live by your rules. We're not in your country simply because we do not like your rules. So close our borders. If you're illegal, you're illegal. I'm sorry if you're a child. Send them back to their family where they can be cared for. But... I don't know. I just sometimes,
well,
I'm not often at a loss for words, but this really does leave me at a loss for words at this time.
Well, Chuck, you think that legislative terms are the single greatest problem that has caused our representative form of government to be removed from we the people. Why don't you talk about term limits for a few minutes?
Yeah, I'd love to. It's just a huge issue, and it's like I said, I think that's the greatest problem that we have in Washington now, is that we're sending people there and we're allowing them to, and we're actually permitting them to overstay to the point that they become ineffective legislators and representatives. So we've seen it time and time again. Term limits are indeed the answer to that. And I know that that's not popular because we're asking Congress essentially to tell themselves to fire themselves. Well, you know, the Congress was never intended to be anything more, and this is why it's a two-year term for Congress, because we're supposed to be closest to the people. And because we have power to the purse in Congress, this is why, you know, they gave them 2 years so that they couldn't abuse it. For example, you know, the Senate was 6 years from... They could do something to us financially with the power of the purse if they had it, and actually hurt the country and be immune for 6 years, and we would be stuck with the consequences of that. So on the congressional side, it's supposed to be a citizen representative or citizen legislator that actually accomplishes the will of the people that they represent. We've gotten so far away from that in Washington, D.C., and that's what I'm fighting against in this election because, you know, we're you know, if people have their way, we're going to end up sending somebody that has no intention of representing the people. You know, they'll say anything on the campaign trail, but if you look at the history, it's just not there. Who they're aligned with, it's just not there. There's an organization called U.S. Term Limits, and I'm proud to say that I actually signed their pledge for term limits, and the pledge essentially says that I would co-sponsor a constitutional amendment to end term limits, and that I would vote affirmatively to pass such a thing. So, so I've told the people that I'm working with, because they all say the same thing. I said, well, how do I know you're not going to get there and just do what you want to do? I'm like, well, because I'm going to remain accountable. And I will term limit myself, and I've made that pledge publicly, because that's how strongly I feel about it.
Well, we're down to our last 7 minutes, so would you like to do a closing statement? And your website again is?
My website is Wooten2014, Wooten2014.com, and please go check it out. You know, we've got some pretty good content on there. We're adding stuff to it almost every day. And so we've got a you know what I'm considering a pretty hot race going on down here in southern Arizona, and it should be very important to the nation because the section of the Mexican border that is in the district that I will be representing is where probably, you know, 90% or more of the illegal drugs are coming into this country, and when they come in, they're dispersed, and so, you know, they're as far as we can get. So we need to stop that flow of drugs because it's ruining our community. So it's a very important district to the country, not And I just have to reiterate that it's really time to move this conversation to the right and not allow, you know, the rhinos of the GOP establishment or whatever we want to call them today, to not allow them to continue to perpetuate the mess that we're in. We need to elect representatives that will stand up and really get something done and not waver on conservative principles. And that's the guy I am. And, you know, if you heard anything that you like today, go to the website and support us. Again, we're a grassroots campaign. We need all the help we can get. We're up against the big Washington money and all the support, the back office support and stuff that comes with that. So I believe that we're going to win. And I wouldn't be in it if I didn't. So give us a hand if you would. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. And you enjoy your protest out there. Just don't get yourself arrested.
I will not get arrested, but I forgot my, and I'm in Tucson at 1:00 in the afternoon, so in July, so it's the warm out. But thank you so much for coming on. My goodness, what a great show! I really, really enjoyed it. And if you'd like to have me on again, just give me a shout. I'd be happy to.
Well, I thank you very much, and I will invite you back.
Well, thanks.
All right. That's Chuck Wooten, and he's running for Congress out of Arizona District 2. So check out his website, Wooten, Wooten2014.com. We're down to our last 4 minutes, and we've got a great guest coming up on Tuesday. We have another segment of the Dump Lindsey Graham, The Fight's Not Over Yet. Thomas Ravenel, you may know the name. He's on the TV show Southern Charm, and he's also a political powerhouse here in the state of South Carolina, a former Secretary of Treasury for the state, and he's thrown his hat in the ring officially on the 14th and 15th, and he'll be joining us on the show. Matter of fact, the day before the show on Monday, he will be at our Tea Party meeting. So I'll be talking to him, and there's also another gentleman, Victor Coker, that is also challenging Lindsey Graham, a libertarian, and Ravenel's running on the independent ticket, but he is a true conservative, almost to the point of being libertarian. So we're going to have a great show, Dan, coming up when we come back over the weekend.
Looking forward to it. That is going to be for those not familiar with him, it's going to be a really, really good interview. And, you know, you're going to hear a lot of interesting things during that show for sure.
I'm sure. He's known to be a little unorthodox and a little bit of an interesting individual with a colorful background. But we will be back here on Tuesday. So I hope everyone has a healthy, happy, and safe weekend. It is summertime. I know you all are out there probably having your barbecues and pools and picnics and everything else. So be careful. You know, look out for yourself, because the people around you are not looking about what you're doing. So be careful out there. And come back again on Tuesday. So until then, we say good night and God bless.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. Get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense, the proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.